Next up, we're going to go with Jake Davis. Fish spawning and stocking update. Item 27 on the agenda.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission.
Secretary Roebling, Jake Davis, Fisheries Program Administrator. Thank you for the time this afternoon. I will be visiting on updates on our aquatic spring spawning and then stocking. And I just got a text a few minutes ago that the crew in the Northeast ran the last nets and we've hit our egg goal for the year. But I'll certainly touch on that a little bit more and some of the ways that we get those fish and the reasons for it. But again, appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Chris. So to jump into the spawning, April is usually that month of the year that we take a lot of eggs. This year, of course, with the delayed spring, we did go into May. But April is the time that we look for it. Our goal this year for walleye was 105 million eggs. Actually, that dropped down to about 95 million. We were going to take some eggs for some neighboring states that we didn't have to. Now, the way that we do this is we go out and collect eggs from wild stock, essentially. We bring those eggs back to our hatcheries. That's where we raise them and then stock them out from there. These eggs are stocked around the state depending on requests that come in from the different area offices. And again, this is that time of year that we go out. Generally, this year, for example, we were hoping to get out on the 11th of April is when we were going to start. Mother Nature had some different ideas, and it was a little bit later. It was actually last week before we decided we were able to actually take any eggs when it was safe for staff to do that. However, we were able to have some good days out there and able to get the egg requests filled, as I mentioned, just today. The way that we do this is that we take eggs from a number of different locations around the state. What we do is we go out, we set nets, and then we collect those fish. We're able to strip eggs from ripe females. We fertilize those eggs in the field, and then the vast majority are taken to Blue Dog State Fish Hatchery in the Northeast. We drive those eggs, but if we're fortunate enough like we were this year, we can actually fly those eggs to get them to the hatchery as soon as possible. Now, the number of eggs that we take in a day can certainly depend on the number of fish, but for example, I believe Tuesday this week alone, we took 25 million eggs in a day. So it can go very quickly when the fish are cooperative. Now, where we take eggs in the state also varies. Vast majority comes from the Missouri River, the Grand River portion up by Mobird specifically. However, we did take eggs in the southeast of Brush Lake, and then also a couple locations in the northeast. So the idea is that we, you know, essentially can spread out our effort and hope that we can find some locations where we can catch good numbers of females. In this picture here, this is a large female walleye from the Grand River. I believe the largest female that was sampled this year during spawning was over 15 pounds. So we do see some very large fish. They are returned alive back to the system after eggs are taken from them. So the goal this year, again, as I mentioned, that's actually closer to 95 million. And then for yellow perch, we also take yellow perch eggs, and that was 1 million, and we're right at that goal as well. I mentioned that the vast majority of those eggs go to Blue Dog State Fish Hatchery, although this year, for the second time, we will be attempting to hatch walleye eggs in Cleghorn Springs State Fish Hatchery in Rapid City using a recirculating aquaculture system. So this RAS system is some new technology that we're working with in the state. Some neighboring states use it. The idea is that they're much smaller systems and you can have them in a lot of different locations around the state. So actually, currently, they're probably on the road right now. About 3 million eggs are headed to Rapid City, with the goal being that they'll reach Cleghorn this afternoon and staff there can work with their new system to hatch those eggs out. So with that, just some quick updates on our walleye spawning efforts. I do want to take this opportunity to thank aquatic staff. It's a major effort. Basically, we're going 7 days a week once operations start, as long as weather is conducive. And I also want to make sure that I thank all the staff outside the aquatic section that helps out. We have a lot of staff that comes from, a lot of different disciplines that really help our team out. And if we didn't have that help, we wouldn't be able to make this happen. They make a lot of sacrifices. That includes holidays, weekends. I know that staff has anniversaries and birthdays that fall within that, and spawning is something that still happens despite all those things. So just a big thank you to our staff that makes this happen year in, year out. Just to put in perspective, this was actually a fairly light year. Last year, our egg request was basically double of what this was. That varies year to year depending on what requests are. So this year being a light year, a lot of that was actually a function of COVID. Because in 2020, we did not take any walleye eggs. So because of that, last year was kind of a makeup year. So anything that had been on the stocking schedule for 2020 got pushed back to 21. and it made our egg request quite large. So this year it was more reduced, which again made it a little bit easier for it to hit our goal, but we were able to do it really well, and a big thank you to the staff for that. So that's some of our walleye stocking information and its perch. So again, those eggs are at the hatchery, and as they start to hatch out, we'll start stocking those. I also wanted to cover some of our stocking efforts that happen outside of hatchery product. What we have here is what we call trap and transfer. This is the time of year that we do a lot of that. Essentially what trap and transfer is, we go to a certain system that may have an abundance of a certain species of a certain size, and what we'll do is we'll take those fish and we'll move them to another location. It's a great example or a great opportunity for us to give certain fisheries a shot in the arm with some adult fish we can get from some other systems. Some of the reason we do it this time of year with the cooler water temperatures, they haul much better. Additionally, we're able to sample them much easier. And then also, when we can get them this time of year, what we call pre-spawn, when we stock those adult fish in another water, not only do those adult fish instantly provide angling opportunity by putting an adult product in a water, but also they can provide that reproductive opportunity by being pre-spawn. So a lot of times we can get two birds with one stone. So I just want to touch on some of the trap and transfer efforts that have already happened around the state. Again, these requests are built into each region specific to certain water bodies. For example, one great way that we can use trap and transfer is to help urban and community fisheries. Fisheries that get a lot of pressure, natural production likely can't keep up with what demand is. So our ability to go to another fishery and take adult fish from that and add it to something like an urban community fishery really helps our management to provide a quality adult product for our anglers. So some of the examples of what's happened so far, and there's still certainly quite a bit of trap and transfer to happen, but to this point today, we've moved several hundred channel catfish to a number of different fisheries around the state. As you can see, for northern pike, again, these are great for urban and community fisheries. We're at just under 3,000. These have been stocked into 17 fisheries around the state. Yellow perch, we've moved over 18,000 so far this year. And again, those are going into a number of different systems. Yellow perch in particular, one of the managements for the folks that are familiar with the systems out west, Deerfield Reservoir has an abundance of yellow perch population, or just yellow perch. Highly abundant, and we're able to go into that system and sample perch very effectively, and we can take them to other systems around the state that can really use them, one of those primary being Belle Fouche Reservoir. So, for example, Belle Fouche has received the vast majority of those 18,000. One of the nice things there is that all those perch are pre-spawn, the idea being that they can spawn successfully and provide forage for the walleye population that exists in Belle Fouche, as well as providing adult fish for anglers to target. And then we were able to do some trap and transfer for some walleye in the southeast part of the state. Again, this is very opportunistic. A lot of times we have some fisheries that we know generally provide trap and transfer fish, but in some cases you just seem to have a year class that hits, does become abundant, and we're able to move those and utilize them in multiple fisheries and hopefully spread that opportunity out. So that's just kind of an update on our fish stocking for trap and transfer. Now, these trap and transfer efforts will continue for certainly the next few weeks. Those will also change as far as what species are going to be targeted. An example of that would be, at this point, we have not moved any gizzard shad yet. However, we will start moving gizzard shad. The primary reason for that is walleye forage. They produce a lot of small gizzard shad, which is a good food for walleye. And so our efforts there are primarily meant to move pre-spawn adult gizzard shads to walleye fisheries to provide walleye forage and help growth rates in those systems. So those efforts, especially out in western South Dakota, will start here in the coming weeks. And again, just a good opportunity for us to be opportunistic when we see those chances and get some fish moved around for folks. We have also done some stocking of hatchery products so far this year. Probably our big one, and it did generate quite a bit of stir on social media, was we were able to get some very large adult muskie from the state of Utah and stock those in Middle Lynn Lake. These fish were being retired from a hatchery, and we were able to get our hands on them, and I believe the largest individuals were in that 20-pound range. And so for us, to rely on Mother Nature or for us to grow them in a hatchery, it's going to take a long time. And so to be able to get these fish and stock them into a fishery and make them available for anglers was really a good shot in the arm and really unique. And It's hard to tell. You can see the weather's pretty poor there, but there's a big smile underneath that baklava. That's all I can say. But it was just a tough day to move those fish around. But a big thank you to staff, because that was quite the trek. I mean, we had to go basically to Salt Lake City and move those fish back and get them all the way to northeast South Dakota. So it was quite a bit of effort. However, when we look at the cost of that versus what the cost would be to raise those fish in our hatchery, we got a heck of a deal on that one. Additionally, we've been doing a lot of stocking of rainbow trout, certainly in the Black Hills area, but also in eastern South Dakota. We've stocked just about 74,000 rainbow trout so far this year. A lot of these are what we consider put-and-take fisheries, where the idea is that we put adult-sized rainbows, 10 to 12 inches, we stock them. The goal is that they're there for harvest. Anglers take them out, we'll put more in. So that's what we call a put and take. Pretty standard practice in a lot of our small impoundments in the Black Hills. Additionally, we've stocked just over 3,400 cutthroat trout in Center Lake, and I believe some of our commissioners probably held some of those fish yesterday. And again, the whole goal there is that they're stocked and available for anglers, stocked at that adult size, so they're instantly recruited to that harvestable size. We don't rely on Mother Nature to grow those fish at all for us. Additionally, we have stocked two fisheries so far with fry, and these are coming out of Gavin's Point National Fish Hatchery in the southeast. They get their eggs from Nebraska, so they're a little bit ahead of us on the curve, and so that's why they've had fry available for stocking while we're still taking eggs. But we have stocked just over 5 million walleye fry in the state so far this year. So just wanted to give you a quick kind of update on that. We certainly have a lot of fish stocking to occur. As I mentioned, more trap and transfer, but as I mentioned, we took all those walleye eggs. In the coming weeks, those fry will hatch. In the coming months, they'll be turned into small fingerlings, a portion of them. And as they get to that size, we will start stocking them in waters around the state for users. Additionally, trap and transfer, that will continue to happen here in the coming weeks. A lot of it, again, is very opportunistic, but as we see those chances, we will continue to do that. It's a great way for us to move adult fish around and provide opportunity whenever we can. So kind of a quick and dirty update on spawning and stocking. The big thing is that we hit the egg goal for this year. Big thank you to staff. It's always a big relief when it happens. But again, a lot of effort that goes into it. We just feel good to be in the field and glad the wind is hopefully going to lay down for us, because staff have really been working hard when they can, but it was quite the April. With that, I stand by for any questions.
All right, thank you, Jake. Commissioner Spring.
I have a question. Do you do any stocking in the streams in the Black Hills or different types of trout or not?
To the chair. Commissioner Spring, we do. However, we pick our locations. So in a number of spots, if we can have natural reproduction recruitment, essentially let the fish do it on their own, we do that. We let them. However, we do have some locations in the Black Hills where the natural system just doesn't provide a quality adult fishery for any number of reasons. And a number of it actually is we have some issues with essentially nutrients in the stream, and they're quite poor. And so we just don't have good bug production. We don't have food for them. And so it really doesn't provide a quality fishery. And so in those cases, we will stock trout just to provide an opportunity for anglers, because in otherwise, we just don't feel natural production would meet angler demands. We also have some locations, too, where the conditions are not suitable from year to year, where temperatures may warm up in the summer to a point where it's over the threshold that trout can survive in. So what we'll do then is treat them as, say, seasonal fisheries and stock trout when water is cooler and they can survive. The hope would be that in certain years that they have conditions where they can overwinter, but over summer is probably the better way to put it with warm temperatures. But if that doesn't happen, we will stock more fish in there. So an example of that would be Spring Creek, Low Sheridan. That's an area that we do run into warm summer temperatures. So we do stock trout in there just to provide a consistent opportunity. But again, sometimes they can survive year to year, but in some cases they don't, and that's why we do stock locations like that. But again, it's not necessarily a blanket management technique. It's more specific driven due to environmental conditions.
Any other questions? Mr. Secretary.
Jake, great presentation. Thanks to all the staff that worked very hard on this. I had a question. If you could just walk us through, you know, we collected those 100 million eggs. Walk us through the hatch rate of those 100 million eggs and when those 100 million eggs might be in that live well, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So the growth rates of the fry to the fingerling to a catchable walleye, if you will, just real high level, please.
Sure, through chair. Absolutely. So when they go to the hatchery, they'll go in egg jars, and essentially that's where they'll hatch out as fry. And if they're stocked as fry, they'll generally be moved off the hatchery very quickly because they're very small at that point. So the goal there is we'll generally stock a high number of fry just because they're fairly inexpensive to raise. We don't have our hands on them very long, and they're quite small. So when they go out, they switch to natural food, and the goal is they start growing right away. Now, in some systems, we've found that fry don't always do the best, so we'll grow them as small fingerlings. In cases like that, we'll actually put them in ponds at Blue Dog and keep them there for a period of time until they get to a size that we're going to stock them as, say, a fingerling. Each system that they're stocked into is a little bit different just based on the current species that are there and what primary productivity and things like that are. So over the years, we've usually kind of adjusted or played around with different kinds of product to stock and figured out what's best and different densities to stock them at, number per acre, for example. Now, once they're in that system, we're going to look for Mother Nature to start growing them. But the goal would be that, say, at age three, they're 15 inches long, which we found in our surveys, that's really when anglers, in a lot of cases, are going to be keyed into harvesting a walleye. For example, we did a survey in the Black Hills a few years ago looking at what size walleye would an angler need to have before they were satisfied with harvesting that fish, and 15 inches shook out. A lot of times, too, we have that as our benchmark as far as growth rates. Some systems grow much faster than that. Some systems grow them slower than that. It just depends on any number of factors in there. But I would say that, say, 15 inches by age 3 is what we're looking for. Again, there's you know, it's always a little bit of a crystal ball when you're trying to figure out exactly what happens when you stock them in there. However, we have seen cases where we've gone back and looked at certain year classes, number of fish that are a certain age, and we can tell what proportion of those came from a hatchery versus what was hatched in the wild. And in certain cases, it can be half of that year class, at least what we have our hands on, came from the hatchery. So they certainly can have an impact in fisheries. And that's actually one of the reasons I mentioned that some of the requests were down this year. In a number of systems, we won't stock back-to-back years, just in the case that we would essentially create two large year classes, which would actually have potentially some negative impacts on growth within that fishery. So that's why in a lot of systems it's at every other year stocking schedule.
All right, thank you. Oh, Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Bartling. I remember right when we toured up in the Rapid area, some of those fish will eventually be shipped maybe to other states. Is that correct? What percentage of this eggs that you just collected would you guess will leave South Dakota?
Through the chair. Commissioner Bartling, so in this case here, these will all stay in South Dakota. Now, at one point, though, we were potentially going to take up to 10 million that we're going to go to Gavin's Point National Fish Hatchery. But even then, those fish were going to stay in South Dakota and go to Angostura Reservoir. But there was some discussion that we would take some eggs for Nebraska, but they did not end up needing any. We did take 3 million eggs that will go to the Sisseton Wahpeton tribe. They did assist us and allowed us access to Pious Lake, and so we're happy to cooperate with that group there. When it comes to, say, some of our hatchery products, say, cold water stockings, it just kind of depends on year to year. We're able to work with neighboring states depending on what product they have available versus what product we have available and almost trade, if you will. So over the years, we've been able to get Red Ear Sunfish, for example, from Kansas, and Lake Trout from Wyoming, and then in turn we will provide them with, say, rainbow trout if they don't raise those in their hatchery. So in a lot of cases there's a lot of communication that happens during the winter with our hatcheries to figure out what requests might be coming from management staff, and then if we don't have that product, what neighboring states might, and then we're also always looking to help them out. And we have a great relationship with North Dakota. We certainly, whether it's Chinook salmon eggs or walleye eggs, we have traded back and forth that way. So again, it every year might be a little different. It just depends on what the requests are.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, thank you, Jake. Yeah, for yesterday as well, it was great to get out there and see what comes of those fish that are stocked. That was fascinating. The muskies and maybe even those catfish, the 400, are they typically tagged, you know, with just being 100? I'm kind of curious what documentation or study availability there is in the future for something like that, for the survivability, growth rates, and such.
To the chair. Yes, Commissioner Whitmire, in certain cases they are, in certain cases they aren't. A lot just depends on the number and then the location and size, but the muskie, for example, they were. We put what we call pit tags, passive integrated transponders, small little tags that go into the basically into their backs, their dorsal musculature, and then we're able to track those fish. But we take all of our muskies, essentially, and that allows us to know what year class they are and what location they came from. We've done the same thing with, say, you know, it just kind of depends on what the question might be. But in a lot of cases, we're moving so many fish at times that we don't always follow up with them as far as tagging or something. Now, there's some natural markers, though. If we wanted to, we likely could. There's a technique called otolith microchemistry where essentially you can look at the ear bone of a fish and the chemical signature, and it actually imprints with the water signature. And so if it goes from one system to another, the idea is you could actually tell where it came from, its natal origin. So even though if we don't put a tag in a lot of cases, if we're willing, it's a fairly labor-intensive and costly process, but there is a way to, you know, essentially track where that fish came from or know if it came from a hatchery product or a different system, for example. Yep.
All right, all good questions. Commissioner Locken.
Yes. Jake, when we skipped collecting eggs in 2020, what effect is that have we seen from that? Are some of the fisheries getting a different profile? Has it had a negative effect?
Through the chair. Commissioner Locken, it's an interesting experiment. It's one of those because the idea is what would a system look like without stocking? Because there's a number that we do stock on an annual basis. In a lot of cases, we know there's natural reproduction. The stocking, in a lot of cases, is there to supplement natural production. Again, it's the idea that nature may not be able to keep up with what angler demands might be, so we stock that as a supplement. Now, 2020 is... Now, granted, it wasn't set up to be that way, but it is a unique case study for us because we did not do any stocking. And the way that we would evaluate it is through our annual surveys. It's our standardized surveys looking at our relative abundance of fish species. So that was last year would have been the first year. And so the interesting thing is from a statewide perspective, this is the first time we'll be able to kind of look back at systems that on a statewide level that were not stocked and see what the 2020 year class was. With that, we have that information in hand, and we're going to be, we've already had some discussions with our research staff as far as what we're going to do with that information. But the interesting thing is, as we track that, as they go from H1s, this year they'll be H2s, we can track what that was as far as a completely natural year class within South Dakota, which, again, is something that is very unique.
Thank you.
Oh, you bet. Oh, way to go, team. Good question. Putting Jake on the spot. All right. Anything else? All right. Good information. Good presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.